Hello, world. This is Allison Pipitone. In this podcast, we talk about music and those of us who do it for a song. Welcome to The Great Unsung. Michael, do you know what this is?
This is a microphone.
This is a microphone, but guess what else it is?
This is your podcast.
This is the first episode of the second season of my podcast, The Great Unsung.
Oh, I love that. And that was supposed to be the first of the last one.
No, actually, you waited until everyone knew it was popular. Then you said, all right, Al, I'll do it. I asked you first, but you said, oh, I'm so busy. I'm not sure. So now that it's popular, you want in.
I do want in.
So since we're so close, we're just going to freeform it today, okay?
All right.
My first question is the question I always ask you. Why do you like playing music so much?
I enjoy the feeling of the music and the people. You know, I like the crowd.
You do?
I like the way the crowd responds to the music.
I have seen you play probably 100 times. 100 times out of those 100, you've done a great job. And sometimes you've done an amazing job. But to start with the bar being always really good, that's very rare. I can tell you that for a fact. So I always ask myself, how does he like doing this so much? I'm not saying I don't, but I'm saying sometimes I have to fake it. And you don't.
I just like the feeling of music coming out. I don't know.
You do?
Yeah. I like to sing.
Do you have a song that you start performing with? Like, do you have certain go-to songs that you start with to get sort of like get your feet wet or whatever?
Yeah. Sometimes I Wonder by Bobby Van Houten and Acoustically Insane.
Okay. Song you co-wrote.
Yeah. Actually, Bob wrote it. I just helped. I helped a little bit. He did it all.
There's a song, by the way, that stands the test of time. It's just as effective now as it was, what, 20 years ago when you wrote it? Would you say 20?
It's been about 25 years.
Yeah.
Right? 23?
It always, and you don't get tired of singing it?
No.
Mm-hmm. What does that song mean to you?
About growing old and wondering where you're going to be in the future.
Uh-huh.
And hopefully everything turns out right.
Uh-huh.
No, I enjoy playing a lot of music, and like even the Cats in the Cradle by Harry Chapin. I love that. I love playing songs that mean something to me and that I can feel it.
So do you aim for songs more that you identify with or that you think the
yes.
audience is going to like? Starts with you.
Starts with me.
Uh-huh.
Because if I don't enjoy it, nobody else is going to enjoy it.
Uh-huh.
If I can't put my all into it and they could see people faking it. You don't get it. They don't get it.
I want to go a little bit further on this because I'm probably just, this is really, hopefully I'm asking for myself and I think it might help me. But sometimes still to this day, when I'm setting up and I'm in a restaurant or a corner bar and I see everybody's backs to me and I don't know them or sometimes I do know them and I start thinking in my head, what am I doing here? Like nobody cares. I'm trying to be really honest. Do you ever feel like that when you're?
It's all it takes is that one person to turn around. No. I guess sometimes you do feel that way, but you're setting up. Sometimes you don't want to be bothered when you're setting up. You just want to get it all set up and then start playing. When people turn, mm-hmm. it makes it all worthwhile. And then you get to express yourself. Like some people like reading a book. Some people like watching a great movie. I like playing my guitar in a corner.
Okay.
And that's my pleasure.
That doesn't get old for you.
Not yet. I hope it never does.
I want to ask you about when you were young, maybe let's just say 18, 19 years old. You grew up in Woodlawn, New York, which is right on the lake, Lake Erie, right in the midst of Bethlehem Steel and all the industry, right? You grew up
Ford
in
plant.
The Ford yeah. plant. That was all industry. And, people think you grew up on the side of a lake. I have this vision in my head of a lake, but it was very industrial, wasn't it?
It was, yeah.
Concrete, like.
Slag.
Slag. The beautiful lake was there. Yeah. So When you were growing up, what did music mean to you? What part did that play in your life?
Well, everything. I mean, everything was music between from my mother to my grandfather to my sister. It was always music playing. So it meant a lot to me. It felt like home.
Radio, records, what?
A lot of the old radio.
What did your mom like to listen to?
The Elvis stuff, Bobby Darin, mm-hmm. you know, the crooner music. And then, of course, she liked the Beatles, too. Mm-hmm. And Fabian.
Oh, handsome. Yeah. Fabian. You said, did you see
Nat
your grandma?
Nat King Cole, my grandfather.
Okay. What did he like?
He liked everything, gypsy music.
Really?
He liked playing gypsy style guitar. Okay. Lithuania.
Why? Was he Lithuanian?
Hungarian.
Really? Dude, so that's in your blood. You're a gypsy.
Yeah.
Did Stevie Nicks write that song about you?
She did not. Oh.
Really? Okay, so, and you said your sister, was she your older sister?
Oldest sister, yeah.
Was she the oldest in your family?
Oldest in the family, yeah.
I remember her. I met her a few times, and we could talk about her if you like. Actually, I have her mic stand right somewhere right in here that you gave me, which I use for recording my mm-hmm. own vocals here in my own home studio. But she passed away.
She did.
Did she love music?
She did, yeah.
She was your older. How much older was she then?
She's 5 years older than me. Years older. She'd be 60 right now.
So, like, you're 11 and she's 16, so she's really cool, right?
Yeah.
And what was she listening to when she was, like, in their teenage years?
Beatles. Beatles, really? Zeppelin, Eagles.
Yep.
Uh-huh. Neil Young, of course. Pink Floyd.
Your name is Michael Joseph. You mm-hmm. don't you have a brother named Joseph Michael.
Yeah, I don't think Joey liked me. You really didn't listen to music.
I love that. So when you were growing up, how did it go from you loving music, having it be a huge part of your life, to saying to yourself, I want to play music?
I think I was like 18 and I was playing music with this band called the Undesirable Dogs with my friend Ron Paul.
Nice. What kind of music?
Punk music.
Sweet.
Punk music with just loud. Loud.
What did you play?
Guitar. None of us really knew how to play too well. Uh-huh. But it was fun. And then I had a girlfriend that said, oh, you guys aren't that good. So I stopped playing.
No.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. You had your own personal, I was going to say Yoko Ono, but that's not true. She was always, it wasn't her fault the Beatles broke up, but you quit because of a girl.
Well, she said later that she didn't want me to play music because she didn't want girls to like us.
Oh, look what she said, karma's a bitch, isn't it?
So.
All right. So you had that, the Undesirable Dogs.
Undesirable Dogs.
Then after that, what did you do?
I didn't touch the guitar for about 8 years.
That's when you sort of got a career,
lived downstate,
right?
Yeah, working in my profession.
You're a CO.
Correction officer, yeah.
Yep.
30 years.
30 years. And so you went downstate to get trained and all that. And so you let go. Did you ever have in the back of your mind that you wanted to be a musician?
Oh, always. Yeah.
Really?
Always. Like, I'd be walking down the street singing songs in my head that I'd be making up.
Really?
Yeah.
Did you ever resent the fact that you weren't following this calling you had or whatever for music?
Well, at that time, no, because I didn't think I was any good.
Because that one girl?
Yeah. No, it just, I know I really didn't know any songs, and I wasn't putting everything into it.
Mm-hmm. So you let it go.
I let it go. And then I started hanging out with some people, older people that were playing in a 50s group, and I started playing with them. Mm-hmm. And I've always played the guitar, but never knew a full song until I was about 30, 28. Started really playing again. Then 31, I started playing in bars.
Yeah, and your voice is really very good. And that's like the thing that, you know, I've known you for so long, but every time someone I know gets to hear you for the first time, they always talk about your voice. And I think part of that is that feeling, because you actually feel what you're singing.
Well, that's,
you know?
Yeah. I try to just sing my own voice. I try not to sound like anybody else.
You don't. And a cool thing you also do is like you interpret cover songs. You mostly play cover songs, not all, but mostly play cover songs because that's what the people want. That's what
people want to hear. And that's what I like. It's funny because I do like to play cover songs. I pick songs that I enjoy playing or hearing and putting my twist to it. If you feel like you can do something to it and express yourself through it, and it helps you from being stressed, like at the workplace that I worked at. You know, it's not a great place to work all the time, and that was a good release of stress, playing music.
I think that's one reason that you like playing out so much is because you're a social person. Is that true?
I think so, yeah.
So did your mother, did she get to hear you when you started performing out live?
Yes.
And your sister?
My sister, my mother. My sister used to come sing with us at Roz's.
Yep. Shout out to Roz's.
Yeah. For me, it was just a side thing, something to do.
Yeah.
I didn't think I would do anything with it. Just play some songs in the corner bar or a coffee shop for people to hear.
And you were happy with that?
Yeah.
Starting to write your own songs. Do you feel differently about performing or learning your own songs compared to other people's?
It is different because you're a little nervous if people are going to enjoy it or not. Or you, when you're singing somebody else's song, you don't care if they don't like it or they like it or not.
Oh, I get that.
But when it's your own, you kind of want them to like it.
It's a little more personal,
right? Yeah, because it is your life. It is stuff in your life.
Maybe that's why I was always didn't want to play cover songs is because people would judge it. They would say, like, so-and-so plays that better than you do, right?
Yeah.
But that's why you put your own take on things,
I do. I try not to sing it like the person who sings it. I sing in the key that my voice is.
Yep.
And then if I want to slow it down or cut a chord out, I do.
Really? Oh, that's kind of cool.
Dude, to make it fit the way that I want to.
Yeah.
Put like a conductor does his thing in an orchestra.
Yeah. That's why it works. I'm finally getting it. You're right. You do change chords or drop chords or change chords. Rhythm sometimes, right?
Mm-hmm. Every song, I could play the same song 5 times in a row, but it'll be different every time. I mean, different feeling every time. So it might come out a little slower. It might come out, I'm in a happy mood. It might come out a little fast.
You've been playing with Randy Milligan for 10 years?
23 years.
Wait, as a duo. Oh my God.
Amazing.
Okay,
he's an amazing performer.
He is. He's so good. And somehow, how did you guys start playing together anyways?
Well, I played with Acoustically Insane, Rob Van Houten and Mike Bundage, and we had great time. We wrote songs and played. We had fun. Mm-hmm. We had fun, but it came to a point where I think we all wanted to play different. And I would hang out with Randy. He would come out and listen to us. I'd go listen to him. Mm-hmm. And then listening to you sometimes, too. You know, I didn't really know you then, but I'd
really,
hear
like
I'd
back
see,
in the day.
Yeah, I was like, I kind of want to do that. You know, play like you guys do. And I saw Randy back when I was 15 playing. He was, 18 playing with my cousins. And then what happened was I went to one of his open mics and somebody hired us to play a New Year's Eve party, thinking that we were a duo.
So, and you weren't yet?
We weren't yet. We played together maybe 3 times, like a couple songs here and there. So
how was it the first time you played together? Was it natural?
Easy, yeah.
That's the cool thing about you guys. You just like, it's almost like you're a married couple. You know each other so well.
I know his changes. I know what he's going to do. But that's how I was with Mike and Bob. It was like that.
Yeah.
You know, the two of them are so good too.
You and Randy actually got super popular when I've known you, meaning that booked 5 nights a week, most weeks, for many years.
Yeah.
And people would come to you. Like, there's this common idea that you have to try and get gigs, which you have to email, look for.
And it's hard. It's weird to say that, but we've never done that. People would come to us, or we'd be playing a gig and say, will you play here? A bar owner would be in the place. A lot of it had to do with Roz's. Playing at Roz's, where I started with you. We got so many gigs from there.
That was like the launching pad, right?
Yeah. And the people there were the people that helped us be better, I think. Much better.
Do you ever get tired of doing it in the winter?
There's a few times when I don't feel like going out. And yeah, not as much as you would think. Because mm-hmm. once you start driving there and like start getting into what you're going to do, it's well worth it. And sometimes those are the best gigs. Mm-hmm. The yeah. ones where you don't feel like being there and you're surprised at the crowd, the people.
Yeah.
And the way they react and the new people coming up saying, I really loved this song and it was a song you wrote.
Yeah.
Or a song that I did with Tom Naples or a song that I sang of yours.
Yeah.
Oh. And I love when people come up and say that stuff. Not so much the cover songs.
Okay. This is sort of a practical question, but you usually do run your own sound, and your own sound always is really good. And I see you carrying all that crap, like, and I know that chords break and like things go wrong. Like, do you have a system for how you set things up? Because that's half of the battle for me is like bringing all the shit. You know,
I have everything set up in my case. I pull it out; it's all in order. That's why when Randy and I, when people come up, oh, we'll help you. We said, no, we're good. We know, because we know right where we want to put it. Mm-hmm. And we put it where we're setting it up. So it's easy. So we're not moving it two or three times.
Are you proactive about taking care of all the equipment, guitars, PAs? Like,
yes.
Like, so you don't let things go?
No.
If like the night before something sounded crackly or something, you're gonna.
I have an extra mixer that we have. Between Randy and I, we have four different mixers that we can use. Mm-hmm. And we have enough speakers where if one goes, we send it to our friend to fix it and we have another speaker to put in its place.
How is it different playing with a band than playing solo or duo?
I like solo and duo a lot because you can really go off and do what you want. You can improvise. With a band, there's a little more structure because we don't play a lot as much as we do as a duo. Mm-hmm. And we can improvise. And I know Randy's next move. With the band, we have to kind of stay structured, you know, with the beat, which the two of them are amazing musicians too, Kevin McGinty and Phil Conroy. And they just fall right into place and fill in.
Yeah, I think what I'm hearing from you saying that is like, when it's you and Randy or you playing by yourself, you can just be focused on the energy going from you to the audience. But yes. When you have to pay attention to like, where's he going? What's this next part?
Yes.
Part of the energy goes back there. And I know some people might think that energy talk is weird, but it's very true. You know, like.
Yeah. Is this guy going to make the change? And I'm playing a lead. And if they don't make that change, it's going to sound like I'm not playing the right lead. Mm-hmm. With Randy, I just know where he's going to go. Mm-hmm. You know, if he feels like playing it longer, it's just going to happen. Mm-hmm.
I want to say, what are some qualities you think a person needs to have in order to have a long career in music like you've had? What are some qualities a person has to have?
And you have to love what you do. That's a quality, right?
Yeah.
You have to keep yourself kind of in shape.
Yeah.
You know.
Meaning, oh, I know what you're saying.
Your vocals.
Yeah.
You know, you have to, you can't be drunk all the time in the bar when you're playing music. It'll shorten your career. You have to want to do what you do and you have to love it. If you don't love it, then you shouldn't do it so much or do something different.
What do you think of your audience, your crowd? Like, tell me about your relationship with them because everybody loves you.
And I think over the years they've become not just an audience, they're friends. Mm-hmm. They're friends, and if they ask for something, we try to do it. Mm-hmm. You don't have to cater to everybody, but they know the songs that we know, and I like the songs we play, so I have no problem playing something that somebody asked for. And you have certain people that come every night. You know, the same people, and they want to hear this song. And I don't mind doing it because I change it up a little bit again, but I don't mind doing it because the people, they're the ones that are making the money in my pocket.
Yeah, right. Because
true, you know,
you're right. Because
if they don't show, then I shouldn't get paid. I can't produce for the bar.
Do you feel like bars and restaurants, what do they pay attention to first? The value you bring in from the money and the people, or if they like you and you're good?
I think a lot of them care about if you're bringing somebody in.
Uh-huh.
I think they can care less about if they like you or not. There's uh-huh. a few bars that do like you, and you might not be a great band, and nobody shows up, and they keep you because they're friends. Or I worded that wrong.
Yeah, but that's uncomfortable when that happens, right?
Yeah.
Like, they like you, like... Do you think the bottom line is money in all of this?
Bottom line is money for a bar, yeah. They need to make a profit. They can't afford to have you come in and not have anybody there, even though they have their own clientele. But if we're not what their clientele like, they're going to leave, so they're going to not want you.
Do you think there's some – we've hit some sort of an oversaturation in this? I mean, I'm saying like
– there's so many bands in this area
yes,
with bars.
And there's so many places that have music. I hit on this point all the time, but I just can't
stop. See, I love that. I love that, that there's a bar next door playing music, because I know that this person's going to say, oh, you know, I always wanted to hear them. I'm going to walk over and listen. And that's how we get a lot of new people. I like it. I like that this bar over here has one band playing, totally different style band. I mean, you go to New Orleans, that they're all bars playing with music, and they're always packed. And Hamburg can be like that if the bar owners would pay the...
if they would pay, and if they would have open minds to try different kinds of music sometimes, right?
Because it's nice to have different music in every bar.
Yes.
Not the same thing, because not everybody likes the same music.
Do you ever feel uncomfortable the fact that you're standing on a floor in a corner? Like, stages are better, let's admit it, right?
I prefer a stage, yeah.
Yes. Why do you prefer a stage?
Because you're seen. You're seen, and you could see them. Like, it's in a crowd of people, and not everybody's, you don't think anybody's listening, but you see that one or two people in the back singing the song or smiling while you're playing, you know that you see them, so you know that this is happening.
Right.
If you don't see somebody and you're down flat and the people in front of you are turned away, you can't see the people behind them that are enjoying it.
Yeah. And plus, to me,
we feed off the people.
Yeah, we feed off the people.
Yeah.
And when you're, I feel almost embarrassed being there sometimes when I'm playing and there's someone like gives you a scowl and turns their back to you and just asks for a shot at the bar or something. And that happens all the time. And you're like, shit, why am I here? Right? Like, I prefer big stages because something inherently in it is like people want to hear what you're doing.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It's more. It's maybe the difference of fast food and a home-cooked, thought-out meal, right?
Correct.
Yeah, that's why I kind of think, I'm kind of bummed that every place has live music, because that means less places that have the stage music venues.
I see where you're going to, yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do like a little stage. But if I'm in the corner, I try to make it a stage.
Yeah, you do.
I try bringing just a couple lights in. Makes you be seen. You know, some people play with no lights, and I'm like, I don't understand that. You should have some lights on you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and dim the lights in the bar so you're the focus, even if they're not looking.
Well, what are your next goals for yourself? Or maybe you don't even think like that. Do you think?
I do think like that now. I think of, like, you doing another workshop so I can write more songs.
Oh, hell yeah, I'll do another workshop.
I think I want to write songs and do more like you're doing now. Like, you're playing an original group, you know, branch off and do something like that with Randy, without Randy, with Matt, with anybody who wants to play. You know, just make an original group of to play songs that we do. And I know Randy and I have talked about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you could do like a little splinter group or an evening all originals.
Yeah. And open up for somebody who's bigger.
There you go. Do you like writing original music?
I do.
Do you think it's difficult?
It is very difficult.
What's difficult about it?
Busyness in life. Sometimes you don't have time.
And it takes time, doesn't it?
It takes time. But it seems like the best songs that I wrote were songs that were on the just waking up or driving to work.
Yeah, I actually think I agree with you on that. But I think that, like, most of the times when you write songs, it's hard work. And then once in a while, you get thrown a little piece of candy from the float in the parade. They go, here's a song, and you catch it. But usually, you have to earn them, right?
Oh, you do.
Well, I don't know. That's my philosophy. Everyone's got different ideas about it. Like,
no, you do. I mean, even like listening to Paul McCartney talk about writing a song, it's a process, and it takes time. you know.
And that's one thing you don't have the luxury of is time.
And I will have time, and that's the next step in my life. I want to write and just play music.
Do you think you'll approach it like a job?
Like because a job. I'll get up in the morning after I work out, sit down and play my guitar and see what comes up.
And
every day, just do that.
Yeah, that's what all the good writers say. Most of them, like that, except Bob Dylan. Do you know what he said? Like, he, during his 20s, he was just like a vessel and everything just poured through him. That's a once in a generation type thing, I think. Okay, but putting that aside, most people I've ever read about or talked with, it is work. It's good work, but it's hard work, right?
It's hard work. And it comes down to the reading things too, like reading things and getting ideas. And that's another part of my life. I don't have time to sit and read.
Have you ever written a song about like your life in the prison system?
No.
Why do you think that's so separated?
I don't know. Never thought of that. Maybe someday.
I don't know. Just that thought just...
It's a boring job. There's nothing exciting. And the things that are too exciting, you don't want to write about. You know, nobody needs to know that.
Right. Your Uncle Tony.
Great musician.
Worked on Broadway.
Another influence.
And when was he there? The 80s? The 90s?
Up until a few years ago. He was working at the Roundabout Theater Company as a producer.
And he's a singer. Does he play piano?
Plays piano.
He and his husband, are they married?
Married, Glenn.
How long have they been married?
5 years.
Okay, because before that they kind of...
But they've been together since the 70s. They've been together. 73, 74.
Do you get inspiration from nature? I think you do.
Yeah, definitely the wind. Yeah. The wind. I wrote a fantastic song, I think.
Oh my God, I love your song, The Other Side of the Wind.
Yeah.
Dude, that's a great song. I can't wait till that's published so we can promote that.
Well, that's what I want to do. I want to, now that I did this CD of Tom Naples songs, and I would like to do the songs that I wrote.
Let's talk about that, the Tom Naples project. My friend, your friend, Tom Naples, an amazing songwriter. I interviewed him last season on this podcast, and he's I call him a musicologist because he knows so much about music and he's so intelligent and he's such a good songwriter. He asked me to work with you to do a project of his songs, which sounded like the best idea ever.
It did.
It didn't turn out that well.
It took forever.
But
4 years.
I removed myself from the situation, but you continued. And that's when I asked you about qualities that a person has to have. As I watched you with the perseverance through that, that was pretty amazing. How were you able to persevere through that project?
I could see the finished product. I could see what was going to come of it. And I started it and I had to see through it. I couldn't stop.
Yeah.
I couldn't stop. And I know it meant a lot to Tom in the beginning. And then he pulled himself back too. And then even Jim, you know, he really...
Who?
Jim Calabrese.
Oh.
He kept calling me, do you think you should finish this? I go, yeah, I guess I will.
And you're so diplomatic. Like, I know some of the hurdles you had to go through with the recording
It was
project.
Hard.
I will tell you, that is true for anybody out there who, anytime you undertake a big creative project, it's a lot. Time-wise, financially, but mostly mentally, wouldn't you say?
Very mental. Because here Tom Naples come to me and said, I would like you to do my songs the way you do the songs. Take them, rewrite them, re-chord structure them.
A beautiful thing,
do,
right?
Do what you do to with my words. And I did that to some of them, but I get in there and here's this click track and I go, I don't understand this. I don't understand a click track. I mean, I'm playing with feeling, not with a 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3. I just couldn't feel it, and it messed up a lot of what I was trying to do.
It still took a lot of extra time.
Yeah.
When you do your own project, how are you going to approach it? The same or differently?
Just so different. I'm going to approach it like I'm going to have my band, whoever's there, whoever I'm going to play with, I'm playing by myself, record it live, each song, the way the Beatles did it.
Yeah.
You know, that you get the best feeling of a song that way, and then work around it if you want.
This word keeps coming up, feeling. I'm 100% with you on that. I think there's two mindsets or two ways to look at music. One is feeling and one is let's get it perfect. You don't care about perfect, do you?
I think some of the mistakes are perfection. So, or the way it comes out.
And I do think there's something to be said for back in the day when they could record and it took 6 months to make a Rolling Stones album. Maybe part of it was because they were partying and fighting, but really, I think there's something to be said for to make beautiful songs that are perfect and imperfectly perfect. You need the time to do it, right?
Yeah. And you have to know what you're going to put down there. You have to, this is how I would like it. And this is the way I'm going to play it. And just do it.
Mm-hmm.
Don't let anybody tell you how to do it. This part, if you're doing the song, just do it. You know what you want.
Do you have any regrets about your music career?
Well, no, I guess not. I mean, I enjoy doing what I'm doing, but now I'm at this different part of my life where I want to do more with my music.
Mm-hmm.
So I have no regrets, no.
That's good.
I mean, I think about back when I was 18, because back then you don't really care what you're singing or what you're writing. And it could just come out, who knows what it would have been different.
Yeah, and you're right, that whole what if, like, what if doesn't matter, right?
Yeah.
I think you're good with that.
Yeah, I like my life.
Uh-huh. Is there one musician that you think people should know more about? Like, because I'm going to have some of my students at Fredonia sort of help us with these episodes and, like, who's one person that you think the world should pay more attention to as a musician?
That would be Stan Celeste from Woodlawn.
Hi, I'm Jordan Cohan.
And I'm Amanda Mason.
We're music industry students at the State University of New York at Fredonia.
And today, we're going to be talking about Stan Celeste.
Yes, we are. Referred to by many as the greatest rock and roll pianist in the world, he was known for his work with Stan and the Ravens and Bob Dylan's The Band.
Stan started his musical career in 1958, forming his first group, Stan and the Ravens. In 1960, he joined the group The Hawks, and he continued to play with them throughout the 70s.
In 1984, Celeste joined former Hawks member Levon Helm and formed the Woodstock All-Stars.
In his career, he played with Neil Young, Graham Nash, and Bob Dylan. He recorded with other well-known names such as Stevie Ray Vaughan, Jackson Browne, and many others.
He recorded the soundtrack to Blue Collar and Staying Together, as well as wrote the jingle to the 1990 commercial for Pacific Bell, now known as AT&T.
In his free time, Stan enjoyed to fish. He was inducted into the Buffalo Music Hall of Fame in 1986 and died in 1991 at the age of 48 in Woodstock from a heart attack.
In 2009, the Buffalo Music Hall of Fame released a compilation album featuring Celeste on the cover. His cover of the song Ragtop was included on this album.
He was an amazing pianist. Played with the band Ronnie Hawkins. He played with Levon Helm. He played with Jackson Browne, Stevie Ray Vaughan.
Jeez, did
Neil
you know
Young,
him?
Yes.
You did?
Knew him through my friend Paul Celeste and, you know, the neighborhood families.
Was he like a sideman or was he a front man?
He was a front man and a sideman.
Really?
Whatever they needed.
Speaking of which, do you feel, you've been a sideman, you've been a songwriting partner and you've been the front man.
And the bass player.
And the bass player, really?
Yeah.
And they're all different roles, sort of.
Yeah, I'm just a backup guy.
What do you like about being the front man? What do you like about being the side man?
I sometimes love being the side man just to let the other person shine and just sit back and make them sound better somehow. Mm-hmm. But then I like to sound good, too. Mm-hmm. I like to be the front man. I guess I'm a little hammy.
You know, like back in the day, remember how it was still the opening band gets the shitty sound and the...
I don't understand why that happens.
Stupid. Why? Why do they do that?
I hate that. And when I do sound for people, everybody gets the same sound.
Yes.
People are afraid that the other band's going to sound better. Who cares? It's a show. We opened for a band, a big band that has Grammys, Randy and I, and the manager come to us before the show. I've researched you guys. I've checked you out. Please do not outplay the band.
He said that?
He said that to us.
And what did you guys say?
We just giggled. We didn't know what. What? These guys are amazing. And how are we going to outplay them? They have these amazing songs that won all these awards. And here me and Randy are playing other people's songs and a few of our own.
Isn't that the dumbest thing? That's dumbfounding. They come up to you and they like, don't outplay the band.
Don't. It was just two guitars and there's a full band there.
I mean, come on.
Yeah.
People are so weird, aren't they?
Yeah. And they cut our time short because of that. Because
you were so good.
Well, no, I don't know if that was the case, but it's like they were like getting nervous about it because a lot of people who were in the audience were there because of our friends.
And yeah, they were and excited they knew for that. You.
Yes. Yeah. And they stayed and watched the other band. They were amazing too.
Once we opened for a famous band, celebrity band. I don't say they're that good, but as the openers, you always have to you have to always squish together. You don't have a lot of space or anything. But they were like, they put a rug, like this, wait, Oriental rug.
Oriental rug, yeah.
Across the whole stage. And they're like, blanky, blank, 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 the name of the person, doesn't want you to touch his rug. And so we're like, what are we supposed to do? And the manager said, well, can you set up on the stage on the floor in front of the stage? And we were like, are you serious? It ended
up that terrible.
Blanky blank 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 rolled up the rug and we played and then they rolled it back down. But how weird is that?
That's terrible.
So, okay. So those are good stories. But
But the bass player from this band was amazing. He sat out there and watched me and Randy and I and cheered us on.
Okay.
That was, he played with some other big name bands and the flute player played with Jethro Tull and.
Really?
Yeah. And other bands like that.
Do you think that the kind of music that we do is going to be obsolete?
No. I think the music that we play is going to be stronger because it's stories. You know, storytelling.
Yeah.
Bob Dylan will never go away. His storytelling songs. John Mellencamp's will never go away.
Okay, I like that. See, that's why we're BFFs, because you're the yin to my yang, because you're so positive and I'm so negative. But it's really good. So,
and your songs are amazing, and they're all story songs.
But they're going away.
No, they're not. Just play them, and people will listen. There's always a new crowd.
So you don't think that, you know, there used to be like 500 cobblers in New York State, people mm-hmm. that make and fix shoes. There's two. There's one of them somewhere in Buffalo, and like two other people in the whole state went from 500 to 3. You don't think we're going the way of the shoemakers?
No. But if we did, people would come and see us more. There's only two of us left.
Give me some advice you would give to anyone who wants to start doing music. What advice would you give them?
Well, if you know somebody that's in music, listen to things they say, like my Uncle Tony would tell me things.
What would he tell you?
Just believe in what you do and listen to yourself, you know, and feel music, like watching you play and go out and listen to people and see what you really like and be true to yourself and play the music you want to play.
Oh, that's a good one. Play the music you want to play. Don't play what you think people want to hear.
Yeah. Because if you're playing a song that people want to hear and you're not into it, it's going to show and you're not going to perform your best. Mm-hmm. But if you play a song that you really enjoy and you perform it, people are going to like that song. Mm-hmm. Or come out of it thinking, you know, that's not a bad song. And look at the energy. But I do get, you still play some of those, mm-hmm. you know, get on the pole songs.
Oh.
You have to get on the pole once in a while.
Oh,
and no, that's a Matt Plazonic saying.
You have to get on the pole.
Get on the pole and show off.
I don't know if you have to get on the pole.
I like the pole.
Tell me you're good on the pole. I've seen you. The best songwriter in your universe.
Oh, God. I'm a John Lennon fan, but mm-hmm. then I have to go with, I love Bob Dylan. And there's so many, I can't say who's best.
I know.
I've been listening to some people that are amazing. And Jason Isbell, I love listening to his words.
He's good.
Yeah, his words are great. I mean, if you listen to Alison Pipitone words.
Do you know that some people don't ever listen to words and they love the songs? They sing along, but they don't.
Well,
those
are people that like those beats, the beats, and that's a different type of people.
I know. I'm not that kind of person.
I love the lyrics. I love hearing a great song.
That's probably why we became BFFs, because we both like words.
But when that guitar, when you're playing that guitar, you know who can do that? Well, Grace Nomberg, she can make a song sound. Pamela Ryder can make a song.
Sing the phone book.
Yeah.
And you'll be like, I'm buying that. Yeah.
Tim Andrews.
What's the song that in your repertoire of your cover songs that you play that you think is technically the best song? Like if you could put in a time capsule.
Hallelujah.
Oh, okay. It's a beautiful song. The words are beauty and poetry and so meaningful. And sometimes it's going the way of another good song, Brown Eyed Girl, because people are tired. Do you think people are tired of hearing it? Not just from you.
I'm sure there are people. I'm sure there are people. But every time I play, I get somebody asking, will you please play this for me?
Yeah.
And sometimes I throw another verse in because there's 70 different verses.
Yeah, that's true.
And it changes it up for me.
Yeah.
Or I play the guitar a little different. Or I hear my friend sing it. And I love the way she does it, or another person singing it. And I kind of adapt my way that day, the way they sing it.
So the song and songs are, what's the word I'm looking for?
Medicine.
They're fluid. Oh, you said medicine. That's good. They're medicine. Do you think music is medicine?
It helps people. I think so. Yeah, I think people are depressed or in a weird place or too angry, and they're hearing something that calms them down or just makes them feel... Mm-hmm. You know, this is good.
You know, they say, like, my nephew likes, like, Slipknot and stuff like that. And that also is medicine. It doesn't make people more angry. It makes people get, it makes
stimulates the mind.
Yes. And it helps deal with emotion, like working out or something like that, right?
Oh, yeah. It motivates you. It pumps up your blood. It probably gets the endorphins going crazy in your head.
What do you think about all the high schools, cutting music programs.
Terrible.
Why?
Because music is mathematical. And I mean, it's part of everything. I mean, it's not part of everything, but music opens the mind of people. I mean, it makes you a better person. If you're a mathematician and you can do math like nobody else, but I don't care for math. You don't care for math, but it's needed because it's needed.
Somebody has to do math.
Somebody has to do it. So why can't somebody do music? Because it makes math doesn't bring the world together. Music does. But I mean, there's four sides, I guess. Mm-hmm.
Just like the dream catchers that you make.
Yeah, I hate that they're cut music. By the way.
Yeah.
I like my dream catchers.
And you make dream catchers in your spare time out of sticks and
grapevines.
Grapevines.
Sinew.
And sinew. Wait, I don't want to hear. Can you make vegan dream catchers?
It is. It's simulated sinew.
What's it made out of?
Probably cloth. Spider web. I don't know.
Spider web. All right, Michael, I want to thank you for being my best friend and for coming to kick off season 2.
Well, I hope you enjoyed it. I hope everybody enjoys it. And thank you, Allison.
All right. I'll see you in about 2 seconds.
All right.
Okay, bye. And there you have it. Yes, indeed, we are back. What better way to kick off things than with my BFF, Michael Skoronski. Mike's album is coming out at some point in 2020, so please feel free to reach out to us if you want more information. And he's probably one of the only people I know who actually should make CDs because he will sell them like hotcakes. In fact, that was his nickname in high school, Hotcakes Skoronski. And also a huge shout out to Jordan Cohen and Amanda Mason for producing and editing this episode and for giving us some much needed information about Woodlawn's own Stan Celeste. I'm so proud of my SUNY Fredonia music industry students. Thank you, Jordan, don't call him Kyle, and Amanda for doing such a great job. Please like and share this podcast. Feel free to contact us with questions or comments at thegreatunsung@gmail.com. Until next time, keep the faith. This is Allison Pipitone. Thanks for listening to The Great Unsung.